Welcome to the Discotech Podcast. This episode, we're going to be talking about Deep Space Nine Season 4. And welcome to special guest Rob Hedrick. We're so happy to have you back on the podcast. We love talking to you every time you're able to stop by.
I enjoy talking to you all as well.
This is the first time that I watched Season 4 here as I'm working my way through the show. And so I thought we could just kind of go over some of the episodes that were the most meaningful to me and just get everyone's thoughts on it as like a fun recap, because I know most people have seen this already. The show is 20 something years old. So so it's not new for everybody else, but as we go through, it might be fun for people to remember what it was like when they watched it the first time. So in the first episode, it starts with Worf finally joining the crew on the station, which I knew Worf was going to show up at some point because the GIFs and things that are around. It was just, it made me realize how much I missed Worf and how much I missed TNG. And now I want to go back and watch that when I'm done with this.
So I was going to say, I think that one of the things too, that there's a lot of press around or a lot of articles around the season that the producers were a little worried that it wasn't getting the love. So they wanted to start bringing in some characters that were familiar because they didn't get a lot of TNG viewers off the start. So they thought bringing Worf in would get more TNG viewers to come over after TNG had ended.
Oh, yeah.
Right. This is my favorite thing is I feel like Deep Space Nine remembered that Worf should be a badass, though. Because the joke is Deep Space Nine Worf would beat up TNG Worf.
I think that's true.
And that definitely explains why I was kind of like, wow, I don't really remember him being quite this rough, but I was a kid, so maybe I didn't understand all of it, but that actually clarifies some things.
I think Worf with like less rules around him gets a little tougher. Although every time when I'm watching Deep Space Nine, I get this point, I always have this thought, and it's like, how much Star Trek money does Michael Dorn have? This is between TNG, the movies, and Deep Space Nine.
I would love to see him come back for more, though.
Oh, he's really good. And he also comes back in like Star Trek Online. I don't think it doesn't seem to take a lot to get Michael Dorn to play Worf. And I love that.
Well, and I still remember him as, I don't know if you ever watched a show called Chips. He was one of the police officers on Chips. So it's really bizarre to see him on Chips and have his like his Worf voice where it's very deep, and then you see him as Worf and you're like, that's the guy from Chips.
He voiced one of the bad guys on Arrow, and I didn't watch Arrow anymore at this point. My friend did, and one day she was watching it, I was passing by and I was like, Worf? No. It was weirdly during that time in the DCCW where they would always have their villains were voiced by black men with deep voices, and then they would take their helmets off and they'd be white characters, they'd be like white men that you'd see elsewhere on the show. But because on the they did a very similar storyline on The Flash around the same time, and Tony Todd voiced that one, so it's like it's the two Moog brothers.
That's funny.
I was always convinced as a child that the Beast in Beauty and the Beast was voiced by Worf, because I don't know why.
I can see why you thought that.
Yeah. I mean, this predates like IMDb, and like, this is me like being small and being like, this is clearly the same guy.
Oh, I'm trying to remember the who does the voice in the like the cartoon movie, because it's like it's, something.
Robbie Benson?
Yeah. So I saw him once at Disneyland. Like, we went at Christmas time or Disney World. At Christmas time, and like he sang, like he read the nativity story, and but they were touting it as like he's the voice of the Beast, but his actual voice is like they have effects on him as the Beast, so it doesn't really sound like the Beast if he's just talking.
Yeah,
he sounds like the Beast at the very end of the movie for like 5 minutes.
That's funny. So the second episode, The Visitor, was my absolute favorite of the whole series so far. This wormhole inversion incident caused Sisko to disappear, and he visits Jake throughout his life, and we see Jake grow up to get married and be an author. And it was just the most emotionally heavy episode of Star Trek maybe ever.
Did it break you? Did you cry? Because I always cry.
Yeah.
Oh, every time. Like before I even watched, I don't know if I told you, but I never watched Deep Space Nine before the pandemic. And so I like binged it all starting in April. But this episode, like I knew this episode because it was one of the like go-to, you have, if you like anything about Star Trek, you have to watch The Visitor. And every time, like not even knowing anything about the characters, bawling, because it's just so like such a great story of like dad and son.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's like anytime someone brings up like dad or like good or bad fathers in Star Trek, I'm like, Sisko was the best father. Here is your proof. Just watch this episode. This is all you need.
He might be the best like TV father ever, though.
Like he's definitely,
he's up there.
The girl that comes to visit him is real life Garrick's daughter.
Oh, yeah. It was just seeing the way that like Sisko didn't even care what happened to him anymore. It was just about getting to visit his son and see what happens to his son, and just like seeing it as a blessing. Like most parents don't get to see their kids in old age, and seeing, like he almost saw it as a good thing to be able, like that this happened to him, that he would be able to see what happened to Jake. And it's just amazing.
I also, I love Sisko coming, being there for all the 5 minutes of just being like, so grandchildren?
Yeah.
Would like grandchildren.
Yeah. Such a dad thing. Like, where are my grandkids?
And I was like, you're not even here to meet them. It's just not, it doesn't matter. I need grandchildren.
Need to know that they happen. In Hippocratic Oath, the Jem'Hadar rebels want Dr. Bashir to help them break free from their reliance on the Dominion. And I really felt like this episode went a long way to humanize and give depth to the Jem'Hadar.
I really agree. I love this episode. This episode is one of the episodes I will pull when people are like, why do you love Bashir so much? I was like, look how much he fought for these people who are his enemies. He's like such a good doctor. And I remember being devastated the first time I watched that episode, because The Visitor, I was warned about that I would be devastated. And then I was like, okay, now the next episode, oh wait, no one told me this one was also sad.
Yeah.
Well, and I think it's core Trek, where it's the whole, no matter who your enemy is, you have to do what's right, morally right, period. Mm-hmm. Like, even if these people are trying to kill everybody you know, you still can't hurt them just to hurt them. You have to do the right thing.
Yeah. And just watching it, like a linear watch like this, we kind of didn't know that much about the Jem'Hadar yet. And it's very Star Trek to make us care about them before we hate them.
Yeah, very anti-hero.
Yep.
I had always assumed, but I did like that this makes it clear that like this addiction has been done to them. They didn't have a choice.
Did we know that before this episode?
I don't know.
Was the one where the boy, they found the one as a baby. So we knew that he was addicted to something.
Yeah. But I don't think we knew to this one that this was something done to them, as opposed to like inherently, like they were addicted to something.
Yeah, I believe that was kind of a new facet that they added.
And I did love that when he was like, well, how was I able to break the addiction? He was like, why did I have the addiction? I was like, well, you were just addicted, because if you have a substance enough, you'd become addicted to it.
And the episode was directed by Odo.
It was.
We also saw the different ways that Bashir and O'Brien handle situations. Mm-hmm. And they still remain friends afterwards, which I found really beautiful, because we don't always agree with our friends about everything, even big things sometimes, but you still love them. And I thought it was really, it's just really beautiful the way they are still good friends, even after having this huge disagreement.
I do love that they're like, we need a moment. Like, we're still going to be friends, but we need like a second away from each other.
It's almost like the Spock-McCoy relationship. Mm-hmm. Like they're deep brothers, but they still argue like to the end of the earth. They'll argue with each other, but at the end of the day, they're going to go have a pint and play in the holosuite.
Right. Fourth episode, Indiscretion. We find out that Dukat has a daughter who is half Bajoran. And for me, this was a very unexpected development. And once again, I was fooled into thinking that Dukat might be an okay guy before he said that he wanted to kill his daughter. You would think I would learn at some point to stop trusting him.
It's all about like self-image preservation for him. He doesn't care who gets in the way.
So one of my friends realized like, oh, so you're really not supposed to like this guy because I referred to him as Space Hitler.
Yeah.
Which he was in charge of an occupation of an entire planet. So I stand by that. But yeah, just not a stand-up guy.
No. And I think, and this is the disconnect that I keep running into. And it was happening more at first because I'll watch an episode and I'm live tweeting as I'm going. And I'm like, wow. So Dukat saves the day again, because for the first 3 seasons, he would come in and they would have a question and he would miraculously be able to help them or happen to be nearby. And then he would save the station. And this happened probably 3 or 4 times. And I tweeted about it and got a lot of pushback, deleted the tweet. I was like, what is going on? And there is a lot of fandom disgust for him. And I just thought, I'm not going to touch this character in a tweet until I watch the rest of Deep Space Nine, because clearly I am missing something.
I think there are some people who've seen it. They're like, I've seen some people who've seen it all. And they're like, he's a stand-up guy. And I'm just like, what the fuck?
No, he's not.
Because what I will say, Dukat is my favorite Star Trek villain. He's my favorite villain.
Oh, absolutely.
Because he's fascinating and evil. Like, in the same way, like, Snape is my favorite Harry Potter character because he's fascinating. He's not a good person, but he is fascinating. I also really like Alan Rickman. But, like, and I think Mark Alarmo's, like, performance as Dukat is amazing. But
so complex, and, like, every time you pull back the layer, you're like, well, this is as evil as this guy gets. Right. There's, like, 10 more layers of, like, oh no, he's far more evil than you ever could imagine.
And I have seen Mark Alamo say like, I don't think of him as a villain, but I think there's a difference. If you're playing a character, you kind of have to like get into their head.
Yeah, I would think that makes sense.
Totally agree though. Like favorite villain ever, mm-hmm. like in Star Trek world. Just so like, you just go, oh, that guy.
Yeah.
I would just ask for a little grace for the people who haven't seen all of Deep Space Nine and don't to have an accurate picture to judge.
That's fair. That's valid. I'm just, God, I don't even like, there's stuff coming. That's all I'm gonna say.
It was written from a place of innocence. I didn't know.
Ignorance is bliss.
It is, because when you get to the end, you're gonna be like, oh no, I get it now. Yeah. Directed by LeVar Burton, by the way.
Yeah. Couple, I'm like looking at the LeVar Burton ended up directing a lot of Star Trek.
He did the one where Worf is on trial as well. He directed that one.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I know he did the 100th episode of Voyager, and that one's easy to tell because Geordi shows up for a second.
Yes.
You mean Voy?
Voy, that's right. We say it phonetically now.
I remember the first time I ever watched that episode, ever getting to that episode, I went, LeVar Burton directed this, right? Because otherwise, how do they have Geordi to show up for like a minute?
Sort of. Kalos was a fun episode. It really felt like kind of a Lord of the Rings style adventure episode. And I just thought it was fun to take a break from the usual formula of waiting for something to happen on the station. And I don't know. I mean, they were going through mazes and people chasing them, and they were collecting, you know, goodies along the way. It just felt very adventure style, very, you know, Hobbit. I loved it.
It is. And I think it's really fun getting to see like a Worf who's so serious, like with Kor, who's like, let's have some fun.
Yeah. But he was really excited too. And it was like, man, when was the last time we got to see Worf like be really excited about something?
Mm-hmm.
You didn't like, I mean, I don't want to go back, but like, you didn't like Starship Down?
Oh, that's the one that's basically like a submarine movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because it was exactly like a version of Das Boot. I thought that was a great one for Quark's character development. Like, you go, that's one of the first ones that I went, oh, there's a little more to Quark than just being a jerk at the bar.
And I like Little Green Men, just for the implication that Quark and Nog and Rom are the aliens of Section 51.
Oh, yeah. So little green men on the way to take Nog to Starfleet. And Odo shows up and he's the dog and it's so cute. Yeah, that was good. I thought that one, it was just pure fun, but it also made some really strong statements about sexism and nuclear proliferation, all in like a neat little, like they don't hammer it at you, but it was there.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
It felt very classic, like TOS Trek, where they're like, we're in the 60s, but we know we're not, but we are. And we're going to kind of reiterate the things that are bothering us about our time period.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So in Homefront, the Dominion reaches Earth and we meet our first Badmiral of the series, I believe.
Mm, I like that term.
Yeah.
God, why do all the admirals suck?
Very shady.
He's up there on my list of who I think is like worst admirals, like by what they did. And honestly, I think him, like he tried to take over the Federation. And, like,
it's bad.
It's real bad. He tried to like overthrow a democratically elected leader.
Well, are we supposed to just look past the fact that Sisko's dad was Admiral Cartwright from Star Trek VI?
Oh, yes.
Yes, I think so.
Yeah.
It's like, wait a minute. Wait a minute here. You're a bad dude, too.
If we're supposed to look back the fact that Tuvok is just a human in Star Trek Generations, yeah. I think yes.
Yeah, that's fair.
I was like, it's too bad he's not a Vulcan, because then you could just be like, oh, Tuvok was on that ship. Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love those two episodes. I think they're the like tension and like the first time I didn't trust the Admiral completely, but I did not like see how much he had done. Like it real shady.
Definitely.
Did anybody else have kind of like a pandemic response to when they were like, I'm not getting a blood test. I'm not getting a blood test.
Oh my God.
And then like when the Dominion knocked the power out, everybody's like, I'll take a blood test. I'll take a blood test. I'll take a blood test.
If only people actually reacted like that, because we still can't get people to take vaccines.
I think the sad thing is that that happens a lot of times during our recent history, like 20 or 30 years ago from now. It's always like that, like something bad happens and people start giving away their freedoms, like in an instant.
Yeah, because they think it's what's going to protect them.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to shout out how creepy Colm Meaney was as a changeling.
Yes. Like, when he was just like, hey, you want to go get a beer? And Sisko's like, no, I don't.
I know. It's so creepy because he's weirdly friendly and you're like, what are you doing? Please stop whatever this is.
Well, and doesn't he even, I mean, like, obviously we don't know if he's lying or not, but doesn't he say like, there's only four of us here and look what we did?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Three or four.
Three or four, yeah.
It was very few.
I know, like, because we're not even sure. Like, he could be, because one of the changelings is the Admiral earlier. And as far as I know, that could be the same changeling that's Bashir later.
Right.
Or not Bashir. It's O'Brien.
Did anyone else catch? I verified it with, I think it was Memory Alpha. The names of the people transferred by Layton were all from Catch 22. Like the same, it was the same names.
No.
Oh, no, because I've never read Catch 22, but that's really cool.
I was like, wait a minute. And then I went and looked it up and I was like, oh yeah, it sure was.
That's a good catch.
I'm very impressed that you caught that. And that is a cool reference.
Well, and Layton's like, until you realize what a baddie he is, a badmiral, mm-hmm. still Marcy's term that I love.
Oh, it's not mine. That's a fandom thing.
That's really good.
But it
take credit for it, Marcy.
Cheers now.
Yes, I thought of that myself. Woo!
I just think that it's, you know, because he strikes as like, oh, is he just one of those jerk admirals? And then you realize, oh, no, he's really super evil. Like,
yeah.
You're like, oh, is this guy? Because you started like, oh, is this guy just kind of paranoid? And you're like, oh, no, this guy has an evil mastermind thing going on.
Yeah. It's deeper than that.
I always feel real bad for... I love Nog in this two-parter. I love...
Yeah. Well, and I love Nog no matter what.
Yes. Nog's growth throughout the series is amazing. I always love that he is kind of standing up for himself and you're like, this is harder than it should be. And he's right because like... Yeah. They're not supposed to have this weird exclusionary group.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, as much as they're like, oh, the Federation's not racist, it's like, yeah, you are though. You are the Ferengis, like always.
Yeah.
Ferengis always have a bad place.
Yeah.
Even the start of Voyager, like that whole thing with Harry Kim and Quark, he's like, my people being the talk of things at Starfleet Academy. And then they pull him away and he goes, oh, the racism. And it's like, yeah, it's not perfect yet there, people. Mm-hmm.
And I do like that everyone's like, it's like, Nog, we know it shouldn't be like this, but we didn't know it was going to be hard. And Nog was like, no. Why weird exclusionary group?
Yeah.
And I do love that kid doesn't even know it's like wrong. Because I mean, if you're that young, because I feel like people enter Starfleet Academy younger than you even join the military, which is insane.
Yeah. How old is he supposed to be? Because he seems like high school, right? Yeah,
I mean, Wesley's like what, 15 or 16?
Yeah, I was gonna say, joined? I think it was 15 when he joined, right?
And they're implied that he's a little young, but like not by that much. And I'm like, at least an adult to join the military.
Yeah.
And then that was the second appearance we've seen of Red Squad in Star Trek lore, right? Because Red Squad was the group that got in trouble with Wesley for doing the Starburst maneuver.
Oh, is that Red Squad?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. I just remember it as, that's totally not Tom Paris.
No, definitely not Tom Paris.
Yeah.
He was real proud of, though, all the destruction they caused. Like, he was like, yeah, look, we did a good job. It's like, you committed treason.
I was like, oh my God. And I was like, you can't even be mad because he obviously doesn't know that what they did was wrong. Which I get, if you're that young and you're like commanding officer who's an admiral told you to do it, of course you think it's fine to do.
I thought it was cool too how we kind of saw Sisko's troubleshooting skills, how he kind of backed in and confronted that other admiral. Mm-hmm. And the other admiral was like, oh, thanks for finding this record. And then he used that to go to the other admiral and be like, you guys didn't cover this as well as you thought you did.
Haha.
In Crossfire.
Oh, man, that episode kicks my butt every time.
I feel so bad for Odo every time in that episode.
He watches Kira falling in love with somebody else. Yeah. And at the moment, I feel like the wind has officially left the sails of my ship on that one. So you guys aren't going to say anything right now because you're not going to spoil me. But
I will say this. Shakar is not my favorite. I find him very boring for someone who used to like run him, like be like a terrorist. I'm like, be more interesting, please.
Yeah.
But you can't help feel like every time you've liked someone that didn't know you liked them and seeing them go off with someone else, like we all felt what Odo felt. Like it's just like, it's gut-wrenching to watch that and just see him suffer and then have to suffer at a distance because he still has this really important job to do. And then you see like how distracted he is when he releases the turbo lift control and almost gets everybody killed.
He's experiencing his most human emotions, I think, at that. Mm-hmm. I mean, he wants to know what it's like. This is what it's like. It stinks.
Yeah, sometimes it sucks, Odo.
In the Bar Association, the workers at Quark's Bar unionize and go on strike.
Good for Rom.
That was such a cute episode. Like, the beginning with O'Brien talking about like his union man ancestor. Oh no, he was stabbed like 47 times or something.
And Rob's just like, why didn't you measure this before?
And I love Brunt. I mean, I love Jeffrey Combs can do no wrong by me. I love Brunt so much.
God, this is me genuinely trying to remember what the order of his character is. Has Wayum showed up yet? No.
Okay.
So yeah, Brunt is amazing. I want Jeffrey Combs needs to be in every Star Trek. He was in Lower Decks, so.
Right. As the evil computer.
Yep.
Which was great. It was so Jeffrey Combs of that to be like, to just be, I mean, his voice is so unmistakable, but he disappears into every character he plays.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So here I am now. My husband's only seen like new Star Treks, and now he's watching DS9 with me, but he hasn't seen TNG or the original Star Trek. He's all out of order now. So I'm here explaining, like, this is the evil computer guy from Lower Decks. Here he is in Deep Space Nine. And it's like all backwards. And he's like, oh, the computer. Yeah.
Wait till season 7. I think there's an episode that Jeffrey plays like 9 different characters in one episode. So it says like Jeffrey Coombs as, and then there's like 9 things listed.
I think I read something that they almost had them in the same scene, and they're like, it's too difficult. Like,
and this is when Worf decides that it's too chaotic to be on Deep Space Nine, so he moves to the Defiant.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. He's just that like, I hate it here. I need to live on a ship.
I need to live on a ship.
I was surprised he was allowed to do that, but it does fit like that he wouldn't want to be. He was always a little separate.
I also love that Rom quits his job. Like, I also like, he's like, I'm good at engineering. And I love kind of calling back to, I can't remember what episode this is, but when the scene where Nog joins the academy and he says, like, if my dad had been given these choices, he wouldn't be working for somebody else. Mm-hmm. He's like a really good engineer.
The thing with Worf just reminded me, I saw some interview forever ago talking about how when they first started making TNG, they tried to keep Worf kind of separate. They tried to keep the actor away from the other cast so that he wouldn't blend with them as well. They wanted Worf's character to kind of feel other and separate. And so when like off, you know, from shooting, they were trying for a while to just keep him separate of the other cast. And then they were like, forget it. This is not going to work.
Going off that, there's a great story where apparently Will Wheaton had saw him at a party, and he went up to him and was like, hi, Will. And he didn't recognize him because Will Wheaton had never seen him out of makeup. Because Will, like, as soon as they were done filming, he had to go to school.
Oh.
And then he, like, legitimately was like, who are you? And he was like, it's Michael, like, Michael Dorn. He's like, oh! Like.
So, in the 16th episode, we see Sisko is kind of getting used to being the emissary. He's meeting people in the beginning, but then we can tell he's still uncomfortable. And then the wormhole spits out a new emissary, like a gift, like, here. But it's this poet from like historic times for Bajor, and he wants to bring back the caste system, and everything starts going wrong, and Sisko's like, nope, and yeets him back into the wormhole. I
love
that.
I love that description of that. I do love this episode. It's sort of like, see, Sisko, this is why we need you.
Yep.
I'm sorry you aren't comfortable being a godlike figure. However, you're a godlike figure.
But this is also one of the episodes I point to when people look at Discovery and everything and they go, religion's not supposed to be part of Star Trek. It's like, did you watch Deep Space Nine?
Sisko is literally Bajoran Jesus.
Yeah.
like I do. I sort of that scene with like Kira trying so hard to do art, and you're like, no, you're not good at art. This is why that systems like this are dumb.
Well, and then that one cleric kills the other one because he's like, oh, that's what I'm supposed to do.
Yeah.
Sisko's like, whoa.
Things go downhill really quickly. Yeah.
I also believe this is the episode that Keiko announces she's pregnant, right?
I think that's right, because it's the one where Keiko comes back. Yeah, because she's back from her time away, because then Julian and O'Brien are like trying to figure out excuses to hang out with each other, and she
they
like
miss each other,
tells the other one they're depressed and needs to hang out with them.
I love it so much. I love their
real
friendship.
Cute. But I do need to point out Worf finding out that Keiko is pregnant and being like, I need to get the hell out of here.
He's like, I'm not gonna be here in 9 months, I promise.
No?
Where are you gonna be? Not here.
His face. Oh, it was so well acted. In the 19th episode, I'm going to skip ahead. O'Brien suffers again. It's just
oh, my God.
Meme.
Man. That
and
episode.
This might be the most suffering O'Brien gets. He will still suffer, but I don't think it gets worse than this.
Yeah, I felt so bad. He endured a 20-year prison sentence. He's left with all the emotional scars as if it happened. And they're just like, but you shouldn't worry about it because it was only like 20 minutes and no one seems to, or even can, like really understand what he went through.
Like, I'm trying to remember correctly. He like puts a phaser to his head, right? At some point in this episode.
He runs off because like he finally confronts the fact that he killed his prison mate.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then runs off into the cargo bay and is like, I have to pay for my crime. And Bashir in the bromance like stops him right before he does it.
Right.
Because it's not even just like, oh, you were in prison. Because like, this is a humane way to do it. You tortured them. It's not like you were sitting in a humane prison.
Right.
You basically like lured him into like killing the guy because they were controlling what the guy was doing.
So he deserves that statue in Lower Decks.
Yeah, he does.
And I hope it's still standing when Discovery gets there 1,000 years later or whatever. In the Muse, Loxana, Troy, shows up pregnant. And she has to get married to avoid having her son taken away by the father. I feel like this... Okay, so when I watched TNG, obviously I was little, so I just always found her really irritating. But ever since, I don't know if it's that I got older or they wrote her differently in DS9, but I just find her so much more... there's so much more depth to her in DS9 than there was in TNG.
I would say, I think it's a mix because there are some episodes in TNG where I think she has a lot of depth. Like,
okay.
A different podcast I listened to just did the episode where turns out she was like trying to block the fact she had a child who died.
Oh, yeah. Where she has like the repressed memory.
Dark Page is the.
Yes, Dark Page. And I would say that one. And I also cannot remember the episode. But the episode where she just like falls in love with the guy whose species were like, nope, you die at 60 no matter what.
I think it is quality of life.
Yep.
Yes. But yeah, I do think there's more consistency of writing her the way she's written in those episodes in Deep Space Nine. Because sometimes at TNG, she's like, I don't know, I'm going to hang out with Alexander and get him into trouble for some reason.
And she gets a story credit on this episode, too.
Oh, cool.
This episode is just another reason to love Odo.
Yeah.
He really gets a hero moment here and he needs one.
I also love the other story of this episode. The one weird thing about this episode is I don't know why it's named after Jake's subplot because Jake's subplot seems more like the B club plot.
Goodness. Oh, Lewis had to bear the brunt of this episode. I was direct messaging him on Twitter as I was watching and I was just like, what in the world is going on with Jake and this woman? This is so inappropriate. What were they thinking?
I find that episode, like, as someone who's a writer, I like relate to Jake in that episode, but also that lady needs to stay away from that teenage boy.
Like in the way she's like, I don't know, it seemed like
touching his head, talking
inappropriate
to
touching.
Him.
I was
like she has her mouth on his ear and it's just like, no, 4-inch rule, lady.
I was relating to like the real life thing they're, you know, trying to portray through Jake of like, you know, having writer's block. And I was like, yeah, but she needs to go. But I feel like sometimes they forget with stuff like that how old Jake's supposed to be because he also dated like a Dabo girl.
Yeah.
Yes.
Earlier. And I remember thinking, Sisko was correct. Jake should not be allowed to date this woman.
So the book that she helped him write is the book that he mentioned in The Visitor that made him famous.
Yeah, I do love that. That's a really... Because I don't think... He doesn't know about that episode. Right. I don't think Sisko would have been like, by the way, I saw some trauma involving you. I feel like Sisko would have kept that to himself.
Right.
Well, and yeah, just because... Like Sisko didn't leave, like Jake's future is going to be very different, I'm hoping.
Yes.
Like I still want him to have a hit book, but not all the other stuff.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Maybe marriage less divorce.
Yes. And maybe grandchildren.
Yeah.
So for the cause, Cassidy Yates gets arrested for being a Maquis smuggler. And that was sad because I was shipping that too. So
Star Trek is messing with your ships, huh?
Yes.
I think this is one of my favorite episodes up to this point in the season.
I have to say the same.
I like the misdirection that we have, and we're starting to see that, like, Eddington's not who we think he is, but we don't realize, like, how much we don't realize Eddington's not who we think he is.
Mm-hmm.
And then Cisco's really, like, torn between his love for
Cassidy,
and then has to, like, put his personal feelings aside when he realizes, like, oh, crap, she really has been doing all this.
She didn't mean it in a bad way, though.
No, she didn't, but...
I went from like an ocean liner to like a dinghy on this ship, but I'm still floating.
Sorry, one more.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
How gross is it that...
Is it Garrick?
Yes.
Garrick and...
Yes, Garrick and Dukat's daughter like start like...
Yeah.
Gross hitting on each other.
Yeah, that was not okay either. What was going on in the 90s?
Yeah, seriously.
With that one, what was going on is people were like, people think this character is gay and that's not allowed.
So the answer was a teenage girl?
I'm not saying I agree with it. They could have, you know, just let him be gay. Unfortunately, what was going on was like compet was basically what was going on. But I don't know why he couldn't have hit on, like, he didn't need to only be dating like Cardassian women. Even if they wanted to date a woman, there are plenty of adult women on that.
But maybe too, like, there could have been some subplot to them. Not that this makes it okay. There could have been some subplot too that she was like, what could I do to really piss my dad off?
Mm-hmm. And this is also the thing, because I do remember the first time I watched this episode, I was like, did I misconstrue how old she is? No, right? She's too young for Garrick.
I mean, my impression that is she's like 16 or 17.
That's always what I'd assumed. It doesn't help that there's like four different actresses for her, so it's hard to get the gauge on how old she's supposed to be.
Yeah, I was going to check. I'm glad you said that, because I was really confused, because they had to tell us, like, this is Dukat's daughter, because we would not have recognized her.
Yeah.
She was in, I think that character was in 7 episodes and was played by 5 different people, right?
It's something like that. I feel like there's a part where they kind of have one actress for like a whole storyline. I was like, thank God. Like,
I wonder why it was so difficult to get the actors back.
Maybe just adding the Bajoran nose to the already impossible Cardassian makeup was just people being like, I'm out.
I don't want to sit in the chair for 15 hours for this. Thanks.
Oh, actually, I remember the episode after that, To the Death. That is the first time Wei Ying shows up, right?
Yes.
So the quickening. So this is a Dr. Bashir-centric episode, which...
I love this episode. I cannot watch it that much.
No, same. Like, it's such a charming story, but once through, you're like, ooh, that is a lot.
Yeah. So he's trying to develop a cure for blight on this planet, and he can't find a cure, but he can find a vaccine that they will give to pregnant women so that they don't get the blight, and so the next generation won't be having it. I don't know if I would have taken this differently had I been watching this in 2018, but now, post-COVID, 2021, this was hard watch.
Totally agree.
It was already a hard watch as someone who watched it for the first time pre-COVID, and I have not watched this episode since COVID because I think this is an episode I will pull out when people are like, because I've seen people be like, is Bashir actually a good doctor? And I was like, look at how dedicated he is here. And actually, my favorite scene is when he gets back and people are like congratulating him and he's still working because he still wants to cure it, not just make a vaccine.
Fun fact, the music for that was written by David Bell, who wrote the theme for Dr. Quinn.
The medicine woman.
Yes, I thought that was kind of funny.
Oh, the next episode is Body Parts. Which two equally insane storylines of Quark has a terminal illness and Major Kira really. Gets a baby put into her.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess we should talk about that because it's all Dr. Bashir's fault.
The baby?
Yeah.
In real life and in the show, yes.
Yeah.
That I will say at some point next season that joke is made.
Okay, good. It needs, it definitely needs to be addressed.
It is, I would say, I give this point for the most creative way to incorporate a real life pregnancy into a show.
Yeah, that's true.
Good cover.
I'm glad though that they just let her be pregnant and didn't try and like put a pad in front of her belly the whole.
Love that it's like they found a way to have her be pregnant and not, and also get around the fact that character probably wouldn't want to be a parent.
Right.
Yeah. Just watching it, I was surprised that she was willing to do it at all, but that's really nice. And it shows what like a good, she's a good friend.
I think it was also implied that if she didn't do it, that baby would have died is what isn't like implied.
Yeah. But still, it's really nice, like, even yes, in that situation, that it she is, was willing to put her body through that stress.
Mm-hmm. I do love Quark and body parts. There's just so much happening in there.
I loved how he was like, I can sue the doctor. Also, I'm not dying. That's great.
Mm-hmm. And then Brunt has to be a, yes, be a dick. Oh, my God. Actually, the scene at the end, though, with everyone bringing him, like, chairs and stuff, and bringing him stuff so we can still stay in business, even though he's, like, cut off from the Ferengi, is so heartwarming.
Yeah, they're all like, oh, we give you a lot of trouble, and you're kind of a jerkhead, but we also don't want you to go away.
There is a bit of a, you're the evil that we already know, so we're just gonna keep you around.
So, the season finale. Let's go around roundtable style, and you guys all tell me what your favorite parts were.
My I do love the finale. It's such a good plot twist, but for season four, my favorite part is our man Bashir, because it's, I love watching Bashir just get to have fun, and I think the performances of everyone just getting to do like fun bad acting is always really a good time.
Like more than like the mirror episodes, they get to be different characters there.
I feel like the mirror episodes are lazy.
The Deep Space Nine ones are not my favorite.
The only thing that bothers me, well, a few things bother me about them, but it feels like a break from the real plot a lot of times, and it felt like this in Discovery as well, especially last season when we took two episodes for mirror episodes, and Discovery seasons are so short that you know, any step away from the major plot feels like a loss. What about you, Rob?
I actually really like the way that this, I feel like season four is really, Deep Space Nine's kind of come into its own, and they did a good job like pulling the story arc through the whole thread. I mean, obviously there were some off episodes that didn't advance the storyline, but we get to see Odo really grow. And we kind of see a resolution to what the Dominion really want out of the world. Obviously next season, you know, it's going to be further explored, but the fact that the end of season three was Odo killing the changeling, and then the end of season four was Odo having to pay the price for killing the changeling. And we see him get kind of what he wants, but not what he wants, and becoming a human.
And be careful what you wish for.
Yeah, exactly.
What do we think about what was going on behind the scenes? Because was this the first season that TNG was not running concurrently?
I think so.
Yeah, because I think the end of season three was being shot when Generations was being filmed. So that's what made Worf available to join this cast, because Generations had wrapped.
But then it's, Deep Space Nine never really got a chance to be the only Star Trek show, because then Voyager was on.
Right.
Yes.
That's true. Because I was going to ask, does it seem like maybe season four, because a lot of people say it didn't really get going until season four. Is that because the resources were kind of being absorbed by TNG, and then people were able to take the time to move into Deep Space Nine? Or is it just both.
I think a lot of TV shows, like you look at even TNG, season 3-4 was really TNG's strengths, and I think it's just, it takes a while for a show to find its voice.
Mm-hmm. And I honestly think early Deep Space Nine is stronger than a lot of other Star Trek early seasons.
I agree.
Specifically TNG. I love TNG, but there are some bad episodes in the first two seasons.
Totally agree with that.
What about you, Lewis?
I think this is probably my favorite season of Deep Space Nine, because they start showing that there are trouble in paradise, the Federation, and maybe bad guys and good guys are not always bad and good, like black and white.
Mm-hmm. I think that too, that also reiterates the point when people are like, oh, Star Trek's not supposed to be dark. It's like, there was a multi-quadrant war going on during Deep Space Nine that involved every species we knew.
So yeah, the twist with Gowron is really intense. I was so surprised the first time I watched it. Like, you know, a character that's not just from Deep Space Nine, a character that started off on TNG. And it's just like, the implications of that are insane. As someone who had, you know, watched Star Trek but didn't know characters' names, and I'm trying to mention something about Gowron, and they're like, I'm not sure who that is. And I said, the Klingon with the eyes. And they're like, oh, yes. Like, I got you.
Well, at that time, Gowron was the face of the Klingon for people who start watching Star Trek from TNG. So it was a real shock.
Now I can't wait to see season 5, because I just need to know what happens next now.
That's fair. That's where they end. Oh, God. Even though I've been through this with other shows, sometimes when I get to ends of seasons and I'm watching on like Netflix and they have like cliffhangers like that, I was like, thank God this is 20 years old. Let's go to the next episode.
Exactly.
I don't have to wait a whole hiatus.
We've all finished Lower Decks, right?
Yep.
Yes.
I was like, yes. I had the moment. I was like, damn it. They haven't done this in New Trek and have cliffhangers like that at the end of seasons.
That's true.
I felt like it was like the end of season 3 with the Borg. I remember that whole summer. I was like, what is going to happen? Patrick Stewart has a great line. He said that he was like at some park or something in California and someone went up to him and was like, you ruined our summer.
No, I mind for that because I'm a little young for to have watched TNG live. I mean, early TNG, it would have literally been impossible. An episode of Psych, the season that ended with a cliffhanger, and they ended up having an extra long hiatus, so it took almost a year for the show to come back. Well, this is how long it took. I watched that episode in high school. By the time the show came back, I was fully in college. Like, the season ends with somebody being shot, like point blank range.
When Sean was shot?
No, but his father was shot at the end of the
because
Sean is shot in an episode and then is resolved in that episode. Henry is shot at the end of an episode and you just see his body like collapse over.
Yeah, that's right. That was scary because it was like, well, he's old and they probably could actually run the show without him. So
yeah.
He may not come back. Yeah, that was scary.
And then what I do remember is very specifically they go, Psych will be back in the fall. It didn't come back till like February or March of the next year. So fully it was about a year between episodes.
Yeah, is there anything else we want to say about season 4?
Even though I had to reject people who were like, oh, it doesn't get good till season 4. I think Deep Space Nine is always good. Season 4 is amazing. It's
yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Concur.
I am surprised, I guess, at how unspoiled I am. Like, like I know things like I knew Worf was going to come, you know, and I know there's going to be a major character death later, but there are a lot of things that...
Don't say, in case people aren't aware, do you know what the major character death is?
I know one.
Okay.
So I don't know if there are others. I know one because I was alive when this was on, so I just saw things in the marketing around it, but yeah, don't know any details or the hows and whens. It could happen at any moment. I have no idea. So I'm always worried.
Oh, that's awful.
After you watch a season, just for fun, you should go back on YouTube and Google the trailers for that season, because this is when I learned that most trailers are written by marketing department and the story department. So like, the tease for the show, the episode, it's like, That's not what that episode was about.
Especially episodes that are like super intellectual. They're like, how the fuck did we promote this?
Yeah.
One of my favorite is a TNG one for like the first one with Barkley. They like only focus on the subplot.
Yeah, it's so weird. Like,
well, thank you guys for joining me. I always love talking to all of you. And we will meet back here after I am done watching season 5, and we will talk about it and review it and all our favorite plots and character arcs and everything.
Great. Can't wait.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right. All right. Talk to you guys then.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.